Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Our Nation at Risk, Election Integrity as a National Security Issue. Edited by Julian E. Zelitzer and Karen J. Greenberg. Narrated by Lisa S. Ware. Publisher's note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Introduction. Karen J. Greenberg and Julian E. Zelitzer. Our election system is not secure. The attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021 was a wake-up call. The 2020 election and its aftermath showed the nation that our electoral system was fraught with peril, posing an existential risk to our democracy. Not only did powerful forces in American politics, including the President of the United States, display a willingness to challenge and subvert the basic operations of the democratic process, and not only did the nation discover that there were many ways that this could be achieved, but the country learned in an unforgettable manner that the protections in place for our elections are searingly vulnerable. To cast a vote in the United States of America is an act of both hope and faith. When you drop that ballot in the ballot box, you do so with the confidence that every person named on that ballot will hold up their end of the bargain, warned the congressional committee that investigated the events of January 6th. The person who wins must swear an oath and live up to it. The people who come up short must accept the ultimate results and abide by the will of the voters and the rule of law. This faith in our institutions and laws is what upholds our democracy. If that faith is broken, if those who seek power accept only the results of the elections that they win, then the American democracy, only a few centuries old, comes tumbling down. The danger posed by election denialism was not simply that it could take hold over one of the nation's major political parties, but that there were accessible ways to achieve the goal of declaring an election's outcome illegitimate. The constitutional system on which we rely to determine who will be our president has multiple points of vulnerability that can be manipulated, exploited, and weaponized, despite long-standing efforts to implement safeguards. Layered on top of the process is a communications environment where misinformation and disinformation, from at home and abroad, easily permeate the ecosystem on which we depend to understand the outcomes of democratic contests. While it is true that the election of 2020 ended with the rightful person in office, largely as a result of individuals who refused to interfere with lawfully cast and counted votes, the potential for an illegitimate outcome remains. Had Vice President Mike Pence made a different decision on January 6th, yielding to the pressure of the president and his counsel to delay counting the votes? Or if one state official in Michigan or Wisconsin had moved forward in sending an alternative slate of delegates, it is not difficult to imagine how Donald Trump might still be sitting in the Oval Office. This is not the first time that our democracy has been under threat. The worst moment took place during the 19th century, when the political system proved incapable of resolving the immense divisions that emerged over the institution of slavery and disintegrated into a devastating civil war that almost destroyed the republic. The promise of Reconstruction was undone by organized Southern white violence and a deal struck after the contested presidential election in 1876 that was part of the dismantling of the ambitious federal programs that had been put into place by Northern Republicans. During the early 20th century, the Deep South put into place Jim Crow laws that fundamentally undercut efforts to broaden political rights and create a truly democratic system that offered representation to all citizens, regardless of their race. It took a grassroots movement and a sympathetic president to enact the Voting Rights Act, VRA, of 1965, that finally brought the muscle of the federal government to bear in service of protecting every American's right to vote. When a Republican Senate and president agreed to reauthorize and extend the reach of the legislation in 1982, it appeared that the VRA had entrenched a new era in which the right to vote would retain newfound strength within American political culture. But the election of 2000, in which the Electoral College winner lost the popular vote, and in which a close election led to the Supreme Court deciding the election, ushered in a whole new set of problems hindering trust in the democratic process, and put into motion a number of initiatives that aimed to improve election administration. In 2013, the Supreme Court knocked down Section 5 of the VRA and helped open the door to state efforts that put into place new kinds of restrictions, not explicitly racial, but often falling hardest on Black and Latino communities, that became the center of political battles over democratic rights. Beyond question, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in her dissent, the VRA is no ordinary legislation. It is extraordinary because Congress embarked on a mission long delayed and of extraordinary importance to realize the purpose and promise of the 15th Amendment. For a half century, a concerted effort has been made to end racial discrimination in voting. Thanks to the Voting Rights Act, progress once the subject of a dream has been achieved and continues to be made. The court errs egregiously by overriding Congress's decision. Despite the fact that the nation has been able to overcome moments of vulnerability in our history, the survival of the system in the past is not evidence that a fragile democracy will always endure. January 6th was so perilous, taking place in an era where autocratic forces in other countries have been eroding democratic politics, that it has forced the nation into a reckoning with the threats that the security of our electoral system faces. In the 2020s, we have clearly entered into a new moment of political instability. While other Western democracies are also confronting unprecedented challenges to fair and just elections, the full array of dangers here at home is uniquely threatening. The nation can't afford to continue in this way. Presidential and congressional elections determine the future. With each election comes the promise and the peril of change. Domestic policy, foreign affairs, economic viability, and safety in our streets are but a few of the realities of life that the country's leadership stands to affect. The definition of national security must take into account the challenges that are posed to our free and fair elections, the bulwark that we depend on to prevent authoritarian forces from gaining a stronghold in the United States. Whereas many of the national security risks we have focused on stem from external sources, such as authoritarian governments in Europe or non-state terrorist networks, it has become increasingly clear that some of the most serious challenges stem from within. Indeed, the two threats are interconnected. Not only do foreign adversaries seek to capitalize on the nation's political instability, but the vulnerabilities themselves offer avenues for overseas actors to influence our process. This is the subject of our book. Our Nation at Risk brings together some of our leading political scientists, historians, law professors, and journalists to address the biggest vulnerabilities that our election system faces and to provide numerous recommendations to fix it. The following chapters take seriously Benjamin Franklin's famous admonition to Elizabeth Willing Powell, who asked, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" To which he responded, "A republic, if you can keep it." Whereas just a decade ago, most Americans would have agreed that we can automatically keep it. Today, we know that maintaining democracy requires substantive institutional reforms that can provide stability and predictability to the mechanisms through which we make our decisions. While the lessons of the past helped lay the groundwork for recent abuses, they also shine a light on remedies available for more robust, secure, and trusted elections. This volume tries to offer pathways toward making sure we can keep our republic. There are three pillars to the democratic system that are especially important to the security of our politics, none of which has been as stable as we assume. The first, inscribed into the Constitution, is the Electoral College. Under the constitutional system, each state is allotted a certain number of electors, based on the number of members the state has in Congress who vote for a candidate to be president. Although it is not stipulated in the Constitution, most electors have voted for the candidate whom a majority of the electorate in their state selected. In 1887, Congress passed the Electoral Count Act, which laid out more specific procedures for how electoral votes should be counted. While the system has generally provided for a smooth and peaceful transition of power, there have been a number of messy and contested election outcomes, as the following chapters document, where the underlying problems with the process were exposed. The 2020 election also showed how the process could be purposely exploited by bad faith actors should the will exist to do so. The 2022 Electoral Count Reform Act endeavored to address some of the fissures that had been exploited, though, as our authors point out, much more remains to be addressed. The second pillar has been the right to vote. At the heart of the ideal democratic system is the ability of each person to exercise their right to citizenship by voting for who their leader should be. The Constitution did not articulate a right to vote. Only white male citizens, 21 years and over, were eligible to do so. In subsequent decades, Congress gradually took it upon themselves to protect the franchise. The resistance toward extending the franchise was fierce. From the beginning, white men intently fought against granting this key element of citizenship to other Americans. The 15th Amendment was a landmark moment when the nation vowed that individuals would not be denied the vote based on race. The promise was fleeting, as restrictionist measures were put into place after Reconstruction. Women did not gain the right to vote until 1920 with the ratification of the 19th Amendment, while Americans between the ages of 18 and 21, though eligible to serve in the military, were only able to go to the ballot box after 1971 as a result of the 26th Amendment. The VRA of 1965 prohibited racial discrimination against voting and established mechanisms empowering the federal government to take action where there was evidence of wrongdoing within the states. When the Supreme Court knocked down a major provision in the VRA in 2013, conservative states rushed to impose limitations on voting based on unfounded allegations of mass fraud. And, as we write, the VRA remains under attack. Finally, the third pillar revolves around a multiplicity of other institutions within the democratic system that have been extremely important to the security and stability of the process. The news media, for instance, has functioned as the main platform through which citizens receive information about public issues, their elected officials, and the election itself. The proliferation of social media has only enhanced the possibilities for distortion. When these platforms have been filled with disinformation or even foreign propaganda, the democracy has become unstable. The capacity of state and local government to administer elections has likewise been pivotal to ensuring that citizens can express their will at the ballot box. The campaign finance system, which has structured the nexus between money and politics, has created processes that enable a flow of private dollars to influence elections, and in turn, decision-making by elected officials. There have been times when Congress and the states were able to pass measures that limited some of this money and offered alternative methods for financing campaigns, including public funds. But there have been many other turning points, such as the Supreme Court's Citizen United decision in 2010 that undercut regulations that had been put into place. The chapters in this volume are intended to bring public attention to this complex array of issues that have come to bear on American elections, particularly for the presidency. Long-standing concerns such as election tampering, racial discrimination at the polls, and corrupt bargains still persist. Meanwhile, new realities have come into play in the 21st century. Technology, disinformation, and foreign influences pose novel and evolving challenges to the electoral process. The essays included here reflect on the major challenges confronting our electoral process and the consequences for the security of our democracy. The authors examine the historical and structural reforms pertaining to executive powers, voting rights, and the presidential transition that have led us to this moment. They examine the effect of foreign influences and corporate entities on campaigns, the impact of voting restrictions, gerrymandering, racial discrimination, and political polarization, and the role played by state legislatures as well as the courts in guiding election processes and outcomes. With the dangers to our democracy, in which election security is a crucial element, our experts offer recommendations for reform and best practices going forward. Our hope is that these chapters will enlighten listeners not just about the threats to national security that our elections pose, but about meaningful ways to strengthen the structural and legal underpinnings, as well as the public's understanding of our presidential elections. The authors explore these problems from different angles, ranging from the foreign policy and election interference interconnection to the basic technology used to tabulate voting and to the use and abuse of laws, authorities, and policies surrounding elections. A holistic approach to reform and strengthening the way we decide on our elected officials will be essential to breaking through some of the structural problems that were exposed in recent years. The book is organized into three sections. The first section examines the sources that caused, and continue to cause, insecurity in our election system. Greenberg, Zelitzer, Suri, Hemmer, and Edsel. Examining forces that date back to the design of the Constitution itself, several contributors explore the ways in which the Electoral College, voting rights, overseas interference, disinformation and misinformation, polarization, and racial discrimination have led to instability and a declining trust in our elections. The next section turns to the different forces, presidents, Congress, the Supreme Court, and the states, that have considerable capacity to stabilize weaknesses in our democracy, yet, for different reasons, have been limited in effect. Morrison, Green, Waldman, and Pildes. Finally, the last section centers on the important realm of administration, the nuts and bolts of the election system, from those who tabulate the votes to the moment when Congress certifies the Electoral College results, when this election process has the greatest capacity to be undermined. Persley, Kohler-Hausman, Creighton, Hassan, Stewart, Fortier, and Feingold and Langholz. Our authors underscore the long-standing reliance on trust that a just and transparent system and a legitimized or widely accepted outcome will eventually prevail. Although our authors are not in agreement on all issues and express differences on key questions, collectively, they believe there are ways in which our democratic system can be strengthened given the strains it has encountered in recent decades. The election of 2000 breached that trust. The election of 2020 poked more and deeper holes in the comforting assumption that all would eventually be well. While fraud elections in the past ultimately found their way to peaceful resolution, future elections, we now know, may stumble and even fail to reach a trusted outcome. Our authors reason that hoping for well-intentioned, law-abiding actors as a bulwark against corrupt elections is not enough. All of the authors agree that passively waiting is not an option. Election security and our national security go hand in hand. All the weapons in the world and all the best defense systems won't protect us if the core of the democracy is broken. With this book, we offer a path to achieving a better republic sooner rather than later. Part 1. The Historical Sources of Insecure Elections. 1. On a wing and a prayer. The Perilous Path of Our Contested Presidential Elections. Karen J. Greenberg. Democracy is sometimes messy, reflected Joe Biden, counseling patients in the aftermath of the 2020 election while he and the country awaited official results. Messy outcomes in U.S. presidential elections, foundational to our democracy, have certainly proved him right. Over the course of the country's 2.25 centuries, tallies have been left in disarray, outcomes mired in doubt, and losing candidates certain that they had been victorious. Repeatedly, lawmakers have endeavored to fix the vulnerabilities exposed by fraud elections, often with too little effect. Nonetheless, contested elections, from those that were formally disputed to those that were sent to the dustbin of history amid whispers of inaccuracies, manipulation, and deceit, have long been a piece of the story of American presidential elections. As the 21st century dawned, the nation's long legacy of electoral vulnerabilities caught up with itself. The 2000 election rang as a wake-up call to the vulnerabilities that still existed after 54 presidential elections. Welcome to Guatemala! These were the words with which Ron Klain, Vice President Al Gore's Chief of Staff and General Counsel for Gore's Recount Committee, greeted Gore lawyer David Boies 5 days after the 2000 election. Boies had made an unscheduled, last-minute trip to Florida, summoned to help devise a legal strategy for addressing the yet-to-be-decided election results in the state. Gore's lawyers were deep in the weeds of their legal and legislative options, convinced that the vote count was tainted and the election set to be inaccurately called for George W. Bush. For Klain, the chaos of the moment and the options for remedy resembled, as he later recalled, the conditions found in an unstable third-world banana republic, not American democracy. Legal experts, pundits, and others echoed Klain's sentiment, labeling the election outcome a coup, and more precisely, a constitutional coup. 20 years later, the country experienced a full-scale alarm. The 2020 election took the issue of election security and election legitimacy to new heights with the attempt of the incumbent president, Donald Trump, to overturn the election results through a series of illegal overreaches involving Congress, the courts, and the White House itself. Once again, cries of Banana Republic filled the air, this time abroad as well as at home. A trip down history lane might have led observers to temper, however slightly, their sense of the foreignness of the moment. They might instead have cast a look over the frightening prior instances where accusations of stolen, corrupt, mismanaged, or manipulated election results had followed on the heels of U.S. presidential elections. If the 2000 election was a wake-up call, and the 2020 election a full-scale alarm, other elections had also stumbled to the finish line, most famously in 1800, 1824, and 1876, where the outcomes teetered on the brink of irresolution and illegitimacy. When questions arose, the final resolution was often the result of an individual candidate choosing to concede. Over time, in fact, the five candidates who won the popular vote but lost the electoral vote eventually chose to concede the election, though at times with continuing allegations of unfairness. Early flaws and fixes. Concerns about the knotty challenges inherent in creating a fair and trusted system for electing a president arose in the founding days of the republic. A Attendees at the Constitutional Convention of 1787 recognized the ambitiousness and potential pitfalls of the task they had set for themselves in devising the electoral system for choosing a president. It was, after all, a complex and unprecedented task. As Rufus King, a delegate from Massachusetts, explained, the numerous potential dangers inherent in deciding how to choose a country's chief executive had led other nations to prefer heredity to elective executives. As James Madison reminded his colleagues, the elective mode of obtaining rulers is the characteristic policy of Republican government. For King, the Constitution's prescription for peaceful and productive elections, which he summed up as apportioning, limiting, and confining the electors within their respective states, and by the guarded manner of giving and transmitting the ballots of the electors to the seat of government, included an unspoken assumption. The delegates, he acknowledged, did indulge the hope that the guardrails and specifications imposed in the Constitution on the electoral process would prevail over the dangers such that intrigue, combination, and corruption would be effectually shut out, and a free and pure election of the President of the United States made perpetual. King's reliance on hope among the tools designed to dispel intrigue and corruption provides a telling lens for understanding the history of American presidential election. From the very establishment of the Republic, the founders knew that the Constitution's prescription for presidential elections included potential vulnerabilities. Drafted in the final rushed days of the Constitutional Convention, the Constitution's requirements for elections succumbed to what Madison later referred to as the hurrying influence, as well as the fatigue and impatience of the moment. In doing so, it left many potential fault lines exposed, among them vague directions. When it came to vote counting, for example, it prescribed only that the President of the Senate shall open all the certificates and the votes shall then be counted. The use of the passive voice left it unclear who exactly should do the counting. Nor did the founding document consider a variety of problems that vote counts could encounter. Consequently, the infant republic tripped over the uncertainty and flaws within the electoral process in its first years. In fact, the very first attempt to transfer political power underlined the dangers inherent in this lack of clarity and the role that wishful thinking played in considerations of a peaceful outcome. Hopeful thinking, combined with the absence of specific guidance when it came to unanticipated election complications, was visible as early as 1796, when George Washington decided against a third term. In the electoral tabulations of the election, the insufficiencies of the electoral system as laid out in Article 2 of the Constitution were immediately apparent. As the Constitution originally specified, electors were to cast two votes, the winner to be president, the second place finisher to assume the vice presidency. Federalist candidate and Washington's vice president, John Adams, won the election, only to have the Democratic Republican Thomas Jefferson win the vice presidency. In other words, as Madison surmised, the ultimate choice is extremely uncertain. The founders hadn't accounted for the rise of the party system and the possibility of an election that yielded a president from one party and a vice president from another. At best, an uncomfortable alliance. Though exposing a flaw in the Constitution's structural understanding of elections, the outcome itself, with Adams winning by 3 electoral votes, did not rise to the level of a dispute, and therefore did not lead to successful efforts to produce a system beyond that provided for in the Constitution. In place of efforts at reform, trust that the system would work going forward prevailed. With the very next election, however, the two-vote system, unaddressed in the interim, led to more concerning troubles. In 1800, Adams sought a second term. Disunion within the Federalist Party helped lead not only to Adams garnering third place when the vote was tallied, but also to a tie between Jefferson and his running mate, Aaron Burr. The dispute, as the Constitution provided, was sent to the House of Representatives.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?